everyone. My name is Michelle Bourgeois, and I am a graduate student of Library and Information Science at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. And I'm here today to introduce the Youth Computing Breakout Session. I'm introducing a really great group of people who are working in libraries and community centers who are using technology to help to mentor youth, to teach digital literacy, to foster collaboration, and also have a lot of fun. So today they'll be talking about their work with youth, the uses that they use with technology, and also communities. So first up we'll have Taylor Bayless talking. She is a teen librarian and program manager at UMedia Chicago at the Harold Washington branch of the Chicago Public Library. And then we'll have Jeff Sweeten, who is the coordinator of the Computer Clubhouse at the Howard Area Community Center, and he's also an instructor for Northwestern Center for Talent Development. And then finally, Isaac Baker, who also is part of the Computer Clubhouse and works with the Austin YMCA. So please help me welcome our two candidates.
Hi everybody, I'm Taylor Bayless. I'm a teen librarian and co-program manager at UMedia Chicago at the Harold Washington Library Center. We're located on the first floor of the building, really brightly colored space. I suggest you visit sometime. So UMedia is almost 2 years old now. We'll be 2 years old this July, and we're really a program that strives to bring together the really great qualities of the institution of the Chicago Public Library with digital media. So how can we bring these two worlds together was our big question when we were developing UMedia. And UMedia is unique because it's a partner program, a true partnership where we have two institutions working together to create one program. So the program is a partnership between the Chicago Public Library and Digital Youth Network, which is a program run out of DePaul University. They've been doing in-school and after-school digital media arts programming for about 10 years. And it's a really unique situation for us. It's really the only time within the Chicago Public Library where we have another institution working day in, day out within the library. So let me tell you a little bit about how UMedia came together, because it really informs the way we do things. So the Chicago Public Library pre-UMedia didn't have any dedicated teen spaces within the library. Children's librarians also acted as teen librarians, so we didn't have any dedicated teen librarians either. And we knew that we had to expand teen programming, but we wanted to do it in sort of a really thoughtful way. We didn't just want to build up a space and really didn't have really any curriculum to go with it. So we were trying to figure out how to do this, and we were approached by the MacArthur Foundation, who had this idea of bringing together digital media arts and a large institution with vast resources. So they actually connected us with Digital Youth Network, and that's how the space began. The actual physical design of the space was designed by the Entertainment Technology Center at Carnegie Mellon University. And we've also had assistance from the Pearson Foundation, who funded all of our technology, as well as the Institute of Play, who helped us develop some of our ideas around video gaming. And just to plug the Institute of Play, the Institute of Play developed the Quest to Learn schools, and there's a new Quest to Learn school called Chicago Quest, opening Chicago of next year. They take game design and really think about how problem solving and game design can affect all aspects of curriculum. And then, of course, we have generous help from our own Chicago Public Library Foundation. So we have this idea for a space, digital media, arts, you know, and a library, but how does this actually function and how do we actually develop our curriculum? So the whole space is informed by research by Dr. Mimi Ito, who is out of UC Irvine. and she did a 3-year ethnographic study of youth to try to figure out how they use media. And she came up with this theory of hanging out, messing around, and geeking out, which we call Hamago. And our physical space of U-Media is actually developed around this idea of Hamago. So we have, you know, a delineated space for hanging out, messing around, and geeking out. But it also informs how we develop our curriculum and how we interact with the students within the space. So to let you know a little more what Hamago means. So you can think of participation within digital technology, sort of levels of immersion within technology, from a sort of low level that's still meaningful, that's friendship driven, which you'll see in hanging out, to I think a little more intense immersion or interest driven use of technology that's really based around inquiry. And that's where you find messing around and geeking out. And actual practice within the space, hanging out means exactly what it sounds like. You know, it's friendship driven, it's kids hanging out in the space. This is actually the only location in the entire Chicago Public Library where people can eat, which was a really big coup for us. All kinds of activities can happen in the hanging out space. You know, you can have a lightsaber fight, or our students can play Rock Band or other PS3 games. Most of our print collection is within the hanging out space, so it's easily browsable. We also, in the hanging out space, and one thing I should say, hanging out, messing around, geeking out aren't a linear progression. So it's not like someone starts off hanging out and then moves to messing around and then moves to geeking out. You can actually do all the things at the same time. One day you can be geeking out, the next day you can be hanging out. So we're not expecting sort of a linear progression of students to move, you know, through technology and their use of technology. Messing around is really considered the discovery space. It's the beginning of interest-driven inquiry. So a student may know that they like something, they're interested in something, but they aren't really sure if they really want to delve into a type of media and really explore it. So it gives them a chance to play around, see if they're interested. So this section of our physical space is really open, full of a lot of technology, computers loaded with all different kinds of software, and librarians and mentors floating around the space, providing help on a one-on-one basis. And then the geeking out area is our workshop area. Geeking out just means getting into something really intensely, working on something very hard. So this section of our space looks more like a formal classroom, but our curriculum is really designed around making and building. And we develop our curriculum with Digital Youth Network and their mentors who are teaching artists. So they're real world professionals. For example, our music mentor is, you know, a professional jazz percussionist and studio engineer. And our spoken word mentor is a signed spoken word artist. So not only are they providing technical help to the students, they're actually providing pathways and teaching them about industry so they can actually take these skills and use them in college or in the professional world. So when I say workshops in new media, the kind of things that we actually teach after school and on weekends, our philosophy is as long as we have a mentor with the subject knowledge to teach a class and we have a student who's interested in that, we will teach that. One of our big lessons we learned in new media is DYN had a lot of really great curriculum that they used at their own studio. And then we opened new media and our teens were not interested. So we threw out all of the curriculum and started over again. I think for us, the best thing a mentor can do when they begin is just to walk around the space, ask the teenagers what they care about, what they're interested in, and then build curriculum based off of that. So for example, in our graphic design program, we had a really great fashion program at DYN. It didn't work for U-Media, so we sort of resituated it around video game design because that's what our students were interested in. So we also connect our workshops to pre-existing library programs, like One Book One Chicago. This is some work that was made for our last One Book One Chicago, Neverwhere by Neil Gaiman. And we really have this idea that all of our students, they're not just consumers of information, they're creators. So we want to take them from readers to storytellers and use the books that we're highlighting in the library as a way to get them creating and inspire them to create. Another example of a program is a program that I run called The Library of Games, which is a video game podcast and blog where we take our students from players of video games to creators of content, to thinking like game journalists and really reflecting upon what they do day in and day out, while also, you know, improving writing skills, discussion skills, learning how to podcast and web design as well. We have our physical space, but we also have an online space. It's a closed social network that's really designed for students to share work and get feedback from peers and mentors. We also have an incentive system. So anytime a student posts a piece of work, they can get U-Media bucks back for that work. And then they can turn in those U-Media bucks to our store to get something as small as a flash drive to something as big as, you know, Pro Tools M-Box. So they can really continue their work outside of the space and engage in the space and get feedback. So our next steps for U-Media, we're in the Harold Washington Library, but we are actually going to expand to three branches of the Chicago Public Library in June, Thurgood Marshall, which is in Englewood, Lozano and Pilsen, and then the new Daly branch in West Humboldt Park. And we're actually expanding the program to other institutions as well outside of the Chicago Public Library, museums and other community organizations. The next ones to open are going to be the Hirshhorn Museum, the Smithsonian Institute in DC, and Dream Yard, which is in the Bronx and is in a public housing arts program in the Bronx. I also recommend taking a look at our website, umediachicago.org. We actually just released our first year snapshot study, which is a survey of staff members and students, and we're beginning our second year study where we're going to be following 30 plus students over 2 years. So, thank you. I'll leave you with a quote from Mia, one of our very first U-Media members, and we trick them to learn.
Here we go. I want you to kind of imagine, if you will, sort of a circle in the room. And at one end is kind of science, and at the other end is art. And we often think about those as totally disparate places, but of course, they're not at all. About 15 years ago at the Media Lab at MIT, which is it's a really interesting space. If you think of kind of a loft apartment or something that you probably saw some guys hanging out in college and just undergrads and getting drunk, and they have brick walls and posters and stuff painted on there. The Media Lab kind of looks a little bit like that, or at least they used to. Now they have a new building that unfortunately lost a little bit of the charm, but it kind of looks like that in that it's just brick walls and posters and stuff. There's a print of Picasso's Guernica about the Spanish Civil War on the wall. In addition to that, though, there's also lots of state-of-the-art computers lying around in this space, so these two things are coming together. And in addition to that, there's a bunch of Lego blocks, towers of it. I feel like there's about a 10-foot rise of buckets and stuff bolted to the walls with more Legos than I'd ever seen in one place. And so you put those elements together, and just being in that space is a pretty inspiring thing. And then you take folks that are, MIT educated and have amazing technical abilities and also have a lot of imagination in that space. And so they're thinking about computers, as pretty much everyone at MIT does. But at the Media Lab, they're kind of charged specifically with thinking about both computers and the way that computers are used by society, not just youth. But this group was thinking about the Legos on the wall, and they thought, computers ought to be like Legos. They ought to be what After School Matters in Chicago calls low threshold and high ceiling, and we kind of all share that term and slightly different verbiage, but it ought to be very simple to sit down and use a computer, but you ought to be able to do a whole lot with it. If you think of Legos, pretty much anyone can take two Legos and stick them together, but if you get really good at it, which I'm not, and which I'd imagine most of you probably aren't, you can build amazing things. You can build the Louvre out of Legos. You can make these amazing, beautiful things. but you have to spend a lot of time with it. But it's not hard to start, and they thought computers ought to be like that. So they reached into their buckets and got some Legos, and they had some motors lying around, being at MIT, and they hot-glued the two together, and they took them to the Children's Museum in Boston. And they demoed them there for a weekend. This was, in fact, before Lego robotics were commercially available. They, in fact, invented them. They were pretty popular. Kids really liked them, and they kind of took their notes, and they thought, good, you know, we're really onto something here. This is good. And they did their weekend study or so and went back to kind of their ivory tower, albeit a brick tower, but they were writing their reports and said, well, this is good. The museum, though, didn't stop calling. The museum said, no, you've got to do more with this. So those people got together and they started thinking, well, what could we do? What if we made an entire room of technology like this? It's all low threshold, but high ceiling. And out of that, the Computer Clubhouse was born. It started as just a program, I believe at a Boys and Girls Club in Boston at one time. The Intel Foundation oddly provided some seed money for the program and thought, well, this is good. So they went along for about 2 years and kind of worked at it. And then Intel came back into it afterwards and said, well, you know, we're looking for a really effective technology program, someone that's making this work, that's kind of bringing those two sides, if you remember, of that circle in science and technology, and meeting them. Basically, what they invented was a studio that could be replicated around the world. And Intel said, well, you know, we've got the resources to make that happen. You guys have the idea, so let's make it happen. And out of that, many clubhouses were born, of which mine is one up in Rogers Park. We're at the Howard Area Community Center. In a moment, Isaac's going to speak to you. He's from another clubhouse in Chicago. There's about 100 clubhouses around. And so I'm going to step away from the mic. Of course, this is very important to us, that there's kids sitting at computers. But if you think of kind of a computer lab and you think of computer instruction in schools, which is usually horribly ineffective, it's only that. It's kind of kids locked to their screen. And no, we don't want that not to happen, but we don't want that simply to happen. We also kind of want that side of things. We want the idea where kids are practicing dancing, kids are practicing, you know, building a set. They're kind of bringing in their own passions to make stuff with us. So they're bringing in a lot of their pre-existing artistic talent, but we're applying that to the technology. The stuff that they do with us is video production, music production, photography, illustration, video game production, animation, writing, lots of cool ideas. These were two projects from our members here, a flag that a member made in Photoshop and a video that a member made about a dance team that he basically, well, he did in all ways invent at the clubhouse, invented all the choreography, learned amazing technical skills in video production. My background is as a filmmaker, and I feel like he learned in about a year what had taken me years to learn, and going to film school. And he learned it not because I said, Kyle, you need to learn this, because he wanted to, because it was for his dance team. He wanted to show off what he did. So maybe the immediate output was the dance video, but the outcome was that a young man who previously had been involved in gang activity, was gang affiliated in his family, had developed these amazing skills kind of in spite of himself. If I can kind of follow on the last speaker's slide there. We have been there for about 6 years, and more than 400 members have demonstrated greater technical fluency with us and done really cool projects. I love this one. I don't think Cap D is here anymore, but I want to thank him really for his breakdown of hip-hop, because as a folk musician, I didn't really understand so much of the world I was coming into when I started. And Rhonda, of course, made this whole song through sampling and through totally digital means. Then at the last minute of our show, though, her CD didn't work. So she was able to teach the live band there, though. She'd learned enough of music, kind of again, in spite of herself, that she was able to teach a live band of a bunch of middle-aged white guys, basically a jazz band with musicians. She said, well, look, these are the chords, this is the stuff I have, and show went on, and she performed it anyways, and it looked great. This video right below there was a video we did with a group in Chicago called the Heartland Alliance, which were all immigrant and refugee youth that wanted to make a video contrasting violence that they'd seen in civil wars in their own countries with violence that they saw right in Chicago and gang violence that was right around them. And they've then toured with that video and shown it to other schools and such in the Rogers Park and northern Chicago area. And let me tell you, there's something pretty powerful about a teenager saying to another teenager, dude, this isn't worth it. This violence is killing us. It's way louder than anything I could ever say. I can say violence is wrong, and teenagers don't really care. But to hear it from a peer, become such a more powerful message. And then for that kind of message to be amplified, I like to think a lot of times it's technology as kind of a pedestal. And for that message to just be amplified on the pedestal of technology in a video makes it so much stronger. We kind of have four basic mantras that those folks at MIT and the network kind of originally came up with. I've adapted them a little bit for my clubhouse, but still pretty much true. The idea of technological fluency, that we want to develop members as creators rather than consumers. I remember there was a phrase that I heard before, which I think is really very crucial when you're looking at youth and technology. Technology doesn't really have all that much of a wow factor for youth anymore. They've grown up with it. It's not, to us, it's like, whoa, that's so cool, you can do that. With youth, I think what we really have to emphasize is the part of doing it. I would say of those 400 plus members that have come into the clubhouse, probably 395 have come in and told me, oh yeah, I know how to use a computer. I'm totally computer literate, I can do that. Which means that they know how to check Facebook and they know how to check their email, which are maybe not bad skills, but are certainly now what I define as computer literacy. Do they know how to make anything with it? When they are on Facebook, which is great, how often do they post to Facebook? And what do they post? Are they just pictures from a still camera, you know, in their back pocket that don't really look that well composed? So again, bringing kind of that art side of the studio back into the technology side and saying, well, we're going to use Photoshop, put something together like the flag, where Brianna had to learn about layering and compositing and channels to make the image that she wanted to kind of show that her America was made up of all the youth around her. And with that, you know, with that skill, then she can do more. The idea that we have fairly strict building rules, all of our youth come from underserved backgrounds, and a lot of them have kind of behavior issues and all. So I think it's really important at our building that we have pretty strict rules on how you behave in the building. You have to be very respectful, obviously, there. We're not going to have any violence and such in the building, but we're going to have totally open project rules. You make your project based on what you want. Occasionally those two conflict. If there's kids in their music booth that are making music and, you know, the music is great, but then their rap track is total profanity through the whole thing, what do you do? Well, that's why you have humans as coordinators, because you kind of have to make a call at that point. And I, as an artist, don't feel the answer should always be, you got to clean up your mouth, you can't do this. I say to my youth a lot of times, well, you know, let's make two tracks. Let's have kind of your underground track. I'm not going to even be in the room. I'm not going to even listen to it. But then let's have your above ground track that you can play for other people, that you can play for your mom, your grandma, your priest, your rabbi, whoever it might be, that you know is going to sound okay. And honestly, in 6 years at the clubhouse and working at ASM before then, that line has always worked. When youth really take that ownership of technology, when they really take that ownership of their medium, they don't care as much about the shock value anymore. It's more about the quality. So they kind of ingest that idea. The idea that kids are producing their own ideas, I think, is crucial. And I think that's probably the most important reason why most technology programs fail. Because kids don't want to take a class to learn how to make a project that they don't care about. They don't want to do a demo about something that's not relevant to them. When MIT was researching the idea, they looked a lot at the importance of social context in technology and social context in education. The idea that Photoshop becomes so much more relevant to Brianna in that case because she's using pictures of her friends. Photoshop is so much more relevant to Dave because he was using a picture of himself. Julissa making her own business cards. This was a video that a member named Precious made with us, which was basically a video telling of her friend's story. Had it not been her friend's story, she would not have cared to learn how to shoot or edit or light or do any parts of a video. But because it was her friend's story, something that she thought it was important to put out there, it became an amazing video. Like I mentioned, there are about 100 clubhouses around the world. About 60-70% of them are in the US, but we certainly not in the US. Every green country up there has a clubhouse in it. Which we meet every year for the coordinators. We have a teen summit every year. Every 2 years, it's international. Thanks again to lots of great support from Intel and many other organizations, Adobe, and lots of good folks. So obviously, it costs a lot to send a clubhouse member from New Zealand to Boston, but we think our youth get an incredible thing out of it, too. probably my favorite outcome from that has not been the incredible videos and projects and stuff we've made there, but hearing Kyle say afterwards, he was like, wow, I didn't know there was gang violence in Argentina, but they have the same things going on that we do, which I think is so important for youth to realize, and something that the internet often, right now, doesn't get us as much as it should. The internet is kind of a grouping of ads, and that's okay. I have an ad for myself and my freelance work on the internet. That's my webpage. But in addition to that, we need to get more honesty and more student voices out onto the internet. And so obviously that's going to be technology, but it's combining that art side again, closing the circle. Try to get our kids out as much as possible. This was a field trip to WBZ. Not only nonprofits though, we went to like Chicago Recording Company, a huge studio in Chicago, the idea of like working artists, teaching classes, try to bring youth into studios as much as possible, not just education. Mentoring, obviously being hugely important. It's not just the access. Access is a very good beginning, but it's maybe 2% of what we should do. If I haven't worked specifically with the youth or got a volunteer to work with them, I have failed that youth for the day. I firmly believe that. This was an incredible 3D video game that a member made. We used a tool called Scratch, which is a great combination of basically taking traditional programming but putting it in English, terms that most youth can understand. Most youth don't speak Java or C++ or Python or something. They're not going to know how to use that, but Scratch they can do because it's all in English or portable to other spoken languages, Spanish or Portuguese. There's about 100 of them actually that it's switchable to. And in that case, Brandon brought in 3D graphics that he had designed in another program and was able to then animate. He was in seventh grade, by the way, when he did that. The idea of peer mentoring, as I mentioned before, if a youth can say something to another youth, stronger than anything we can ever say. At the clubhouse, we've had a great time, so I invite you to hear more about it from Isaac and ask me any questions about it. And I'm interested in hearing what you guys are doing with youth as well. Thank you.
Isaac Baker X. I'm one of the coordinators at the NTL Computer Clubhouse. I was going to put a slideshow up, but the two presenters before me, they really told a story with their pictures of what we do in the Clubhouse Network, because the Clubhouse Network is an after-school program that really uses children or young people's ideas. And it fosters their ideas, and we help them bring their ideas alive. That's basically what we do. And we basically get paid to have fun. You know, we have fun. I know I have fun. And I think if these two coordinators are working with the youth daily, they have fun. We have a couple of models that we use with the Clubhouse. It's not like the same basic school type program where we standing over them like we're the instructor, like we God Almighty, and they're something less than we are. That's not how the Clubhouse Network operates. When I first entered the Clubhouse Network, I thought that's how it operated. I'm standing over them, I'm on the chalkboard, you gonna learn this? And they was like, no. And then I was wondering, why are the children rejecting this? Because they've been in school all day. And so they said, since we've been in school all day, I don't want you standing over me talking to me like that. So the Clubhouse Network says, well, what you have to do is you have to be a friend to them, ask them what they want to do, and then help them bring that idea alive by what they want to do. So I say, okay, what do you want to do? So a lot of them say, I don't know. You know, a lot of them say that. And they say, okay, well, do you like video games? Yeah, I like video games. You got 360 or Xbox, so. What the Clubhouse did, it provided us with game makers, so we could show them how to make animation designs with the game. See, you can make this same player right here, and you can do the same character right here, or the same avatar right here. And so once they see, oh, okay, I can do that, then I ask them, the other young man or woman, what you want to do? Some say, I want to be a rapper. And I say, what you want to do, rap Christmas gifts or something? You know, what is that? And they be like, well, I'm a hip hop artist. I like music, okay? So we have a music studio inside of the clubhouse that helps foster that. Okay, let's go in here and let's do some music. Now, do you really want to do music? You have to learn this program. Now, once we instruct them or once we show them a little bit of how to use the program, we expect them to learn through plug and play and trial and error how to use the program, and then they teach their peers, and that makes them become better or more proficient at the program. So it's not us teaching them, it's them teaching each other. That's the motto of the clubhouse. So then we say, okay, well, what would you like to do? Some of them say, well, I'm an artist. Then that's when the Photoshop come in, the Photoshop, the internet design, then we have, I have other children that say they like to be engineers. A lot of people say that, I want to be an engineer. And then I see, then we have Lego robotics. Okay, well, we're going to show you how to be an engineer just a little bit to see if you want to be an engineer. So some of them start to learn how to work with the Lego, because Lego robotics show them how to not just build a robotics, but they have to use the computer and they have to build a program that tells the robotics what they want it to do. So do you want it to fly? Do you want it to move? Do you want it to talk? Do you want it to move when you come closer? So we use light sensors, we use motion sensors, we use sound sensors, whatever type of sensor that you needed to do what you wanted to do. I don't know yet. I said, well, let's go read something about aerodynamics. Let's go read, see, so that when it comes to me, I have to look inside myself, because I'm trying to help mentor this young person and push this person to another level. So I have to look inside myself and see if I can go to the next level. Because I can't help this young person go to the next level if I can't go to the next level. So I look inside myself, and it's interesting because we had this young man that was diagnosed with ADHD, and he was diagnosed with, what was he diagnosed? ADHD, hyper, and autism. And I was like, that's kind of impossible to have both of them at the same time, but you know, that's what they said, that's what his IEP said. And so his name is LaRon. And when he get on the computer, he's 7 years old, and he can navigate his way through a computer better than most adults. And he's 7 years old. And I'm saying, okay, if you're saying that he's ADHD, that means you're saying that he can't focus for a long period of time. But when he comes inside of the clubhouse and he starts to get on the computer, he is focused. I'm not telling him to sit down, but what I've learned is, if I start teaching him first grade or instructing with first grade material, he start losing it, like, no, 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 no. So I have to enter UIC to start fostering his ideas, because his mind is moving at a much faster rate than what we were taught. And this is the new generation, so this is how we're fostering the new generation with technology, because their minds are moving at a much faster rate than our minds were, or how we were taught. They're not learning at the same rate. That's why they can open up the cell phone and, without reading the instructions, know exactly how it works. And we sitting there looking at the instructions, trying to figure out, well, let me see where it goes. And they done programmed it, they done cut it on, and they know how it works instantly. This is how they learn inside the clubhouse. This is the same exact model. So what Intel does is, whenever a new program comes out that's on the market that the professionals are using, they're not just playing, they're learning professional programs, because we're learning everything they're learning, dealing with the multimedia. We have Adobe Premiere Pro, we have Adobe Photoshop, C5, we on C5, CS5, We have Acid Pro, we have Reason, we have Sonar, whatever the industry is using, we have Micromedia Dreamweaver, whatever the industry is using, that's what we have coming from Intel. Every time a new design comes out, they send it to us. And then they say, let's see if it's user friendly. So it's our job to present it to the youth. And they catch it just like that if we present it in a way that relates to them. If it doesn't relate to them, then that's when they reject it and say, I'm not following you, because I don't feel that. Okay, so then there's another part of the clubhouse, because the clubhouse is like a place that, you know, when we were little, we used to create our little clubhouses in our rooms, and we used to have the sheets, and we used to have the fan under there, we used to put our shoes, and our mom would come in the room looking for us, and they tried to find us, and we in our room, and we done decorate the whole room. That's the model of the clubhouse. They decorate the whole exact clubhouse. Now, once they come in the clubhouse and start decorating and having fun and they learning, then we have to push them to another level, which is from clubhouse to college. Now, we have to make sure that we're getting them to college. So what does the Clubhouse Network do? The Clubhouse Network say, well, if you have young people that they're using this technology and they're having fun and they're creating, then we as the network will provide their scholarships for them to go to college. It's not dealing with their grade point average. That's not what we're saying. They're saying, if these young people are dedicated to learning technology, they're dedicated to coming there and creating without you standing over them being their teacher, then that's the new engineer of the world, because that's a free thinker. If that's a free thinker in your clubhouse, then the Clubhouse Network gives every clubhouse in the world a certain amount of money so we can make sure if that young person graduates out of high school, which they come into an after school program, so education is important, so you graduate out of high school, then we're gonna make sure that we pay for your college if you're going to college. Now, they say, okay, well, I really don't understand college. Then we have another thing that says, okay, well, let's go from clubhouse to career. So now we want to make sure that you're not just playing in the clubhouse, we're going to put you in an industry that you've mastered. That's our job as the clubhouse coordinator. So our job go beyond the four walls, like Jeff just said. It go beyond the four walls. It's our job to make sure that these young people are being the new educators and they're using technology to help bring new ideas into the world, because these new ideas are coming from the youth. That's what we do directly. And so when I do this, when I'm doing this, I have to do it with care and compassion and love, because I can understand if I give the child the wrong example, it can foster some bad energy or a bad turn. So I have to make sure that I'm being an example of what I'm talking about to help that child move forward, or that young person move forward. Now, we also do ACT testing, ACT practice testing. Now, I use the computer that does it because I have them on the computer taking the test, and they're learning how to take the test. Now, they're not just learning how to take the test. Once they see the functions of what's going on by taking the test, then creating a project, you can say, well, let me see you create your own test. If you don't like that test, let me see you create your test that's more user-friendly to and conducive to how you and your peers would like to take a test on the computer. That goes back to video game, that goes back to programming. So you see, everything we do always go back to technology. Now, I also do multimedia, so we film. We always filming the ideas, because when I was going through college, through the University of Arkansas Pine Bluff and through Chicago State University, when I was studying physics, I always wanted to put my ideas on paper or show somebody my idea. Because once you get so high in mathematics, certain people start saying, hey man, that's boring, man. I don't want to talk about that. And so you lose a lot of friends because they don't want to talk about it. So some of the children that they are smarter because their mother and father has been reading the dictionary to them and saying, my child will receive a superb education, they're not relating to their peers on that level. Because their peers say, man, I'm not trying to hear that. I don't want to hear that. So what do we do with that child? Because we can't let their self-esteem go down because they're smarter than everybody else. But they still inside of the environment. Okay, so what we use is the multimedia. And the multimedia helps them bring the ideas alive so they can show everybody else. And once you see them bringing those ideas alive, then you sit back as the coordinator and a warm feeling come over, because you see their peers be like, oh, okay, let me see what you're saying now. Even if they couldn't communicate it in the same language verbally, they done it through pictures and the visual media through the multimedia. So that's a way that we inspire. Now, also have to say that recruitment and retaining youth is very important to the clubhouse. Because you can introduce them to the clubhouse, but the key to it is, how do you get them to stay in the clubhouse after they feel like they've mastered what they've mastered? Because they learn so fast, and after they learn it, they like, I'm out. So now what do? Because we have to, that's when you have to look inside yourself again and start playing. I had to turn into a child. I do. I turn into one every single day. Because I play, I get paid to play. I love this job. I mean, I work for God, and I'm gonna make sure that I make that plain. But the Intel Computer Clubhouse is a place that inspires me to want to know more and more information every day, because I'm at the helm of trying to help lead new people into this technology. So I have to always be studying technology myself. And so some days I speak their language. So if you hear me speaking some of the words that they say, then you know I hang around the youth every single day. When they want to do career things, some of them say, I want to play basketball. What I do and what I've done is I took them to the Bulls camp. And at first, we went and talked to Carlos Boozer and all them when they first got to the Bulls. And then we went inside the multimedia part or the marketing part, so they can see it's more than just basketball. So some of them like basketball, but some of them want to deal with the marketing aspect, because some of them tell me, well, I'm just an entrepreneur. I just want to have my own business. So we show them how the marketing part, and we show them how to use the camera, how to use the microphones as for marketing standpoint. We show them how to use Photoshop so they can, like Jeff said, so they can make their own business cards. You can make your own posters. You can make your own flyers. Whatever you see in the world, you can do it. That's our job at the Intel Computer Clubhouse, and we use technology to foster those ideas. And so I'm going to leave you with that. And if you have any questions, I'm right here for questions answered. Thank you.
Thank you to all of our speakers. Now we'll open it up for questions. We have about 20 minutes before lunchtime, so any questions that you might have, you can come up to the mic or you can just shout them out.
So all this stuff is phenomenal, incredibly inspiring, many ideas. I want to talk to you guys about how you run a lot of these programs. But I've noticed they're mostly informal after-school kinds of things, right? I'm very interested in teaching these kinds of skills and getting this kind of education out to everybody, all students. So what ideas, how do we turn this kind of thing into something that can be regularized? And that doesn't necessarily have to be part of school or curriculum, but how can we offer these kinds of opportunities to all students? And I turn that to all you guys too.
So I guess I can start by, one of the things that we do at UMedia every Tuesday and Thursday morning, we offer time for classes to come for field trips to UMedia. So we'll work one-on-one with teachers to try to develop about a 3-hour digital media project that will align with what they're doing in the classroom. And what we found with that is, you know, when we get a teacher to buy into the idea of learning in this way, in this much more participatory and interest-driven way, then they take those lessons back to the classroom. We have one teacher at Voice Academy who has brought every single freshman homeroom from Voice to UMedia for these workshops. And now they're using our social network for a class they're teaching at the school called Shakespeare 2.0. So they're blogging as Shakespearean characters and really trying to take these new media projects and use them in the classroom. So we're really hoping that working with schools is one way that we can provide that. That being said, you know, you have to have a teacher that buys into the idea, and you don't always find that, which can be tough, so.
You know, when you were asking that, and as Sarah was answering, I was thinking of a scene in a favorite Kurt Vonnegut novel of mine. I think it's in Cat's Cradle. I can't remember when, but it's this genius professor scientist who's here, and he spends 2 or 3 days, I think, looking at a little plastic turtle, and all the time he spends is just staring at that turtle. And it's okay, kind of as a society, for us to let that happen if it's a very distinguished, impressive professor. But then I think the other side, and the way that education is going now with the whole accountability movement, is to say that, oh, well, you don't have those credentials yet, so we're not going to give you that freedom yet. And you think about it, and it's like, huh? That freedom is when we learn. That freedom is when anyone learns. That's when all of us in this room have learned. You don't really learn stuff in classes. We know that. There's been years of cognitive research that has told us that. And yet we still, as a society, think that, oh, well, we should put kids in the classroom more. And if they're failing tests, we need to yell at them more. We need to give them more lectures and give them less independent time to learn stuff. And I think that technology is almost secondary to the kind of social shift to think about, well, yes, of course young people should have time and encouragement and resources to explore their own interests. That's how all of us have learned, and I challenge any of you, and sure, you know, when you're mature enough to kind of handle a class, it can be a great conduit to receive information, but you don't really learn it then. You learn it when you go home and you look at your notes or you think about what you have. When I think about my own college education, the only things that I remember now, 10 years on from college, are what I actually cared about and what I thought about afterwards. And it wasn't just in film. I remember things from an art history class or something, but not the dates that I thought were irrelevant at the time. Hopefully, I guess I graduated, so I guess I was able to kind of pound those into my head well enough to remember the test. But I don't remember that now. But I remember some of the artistic movements, and I thought, oh, that's really interesting. That's I think of that myself sometimes. And I think that to expand this idea, what you have to take from our centers is the idea of giving interest, personal interest, and time for your own interest to develop. I mean, it's not a totally unique idea. It's kind of what a lot of Montessori schools and Waldorf schools do to a large degree, and a lot of what you see in higher education and graduate schools and such, but it's rarely afforded to underserved youth, and I think that's at our own peril. It's harder. Because if you just took any of our kids, and I'm sure Mr. Isaac would agree, if you took any of our kids and said, here, I'm giving you 3 days to stare at this little plastic turtle, they would look at it for, I don't know, probably about 2 seconds before they would get up, and probably within about 10 minutes, you would start to have the walls damaged in your room or something, because there's nothing there. But you don't replace that with lecture. You replace that with guidance, with kind of invisible structure. Youth don't want structure. I don't think anybody really wants structure. None of us really learn in a class. You have to remove that structure, at least the sight of it. So kind of like on Sarah's last slide, I mean, kind of tricking kids into learning. And yet, that's when we all learn. We all kind of learn when we're tricked into it.
Well I would suggest, when I went to MIT, I seen that MIT is one of the premier schools in the United States. And MIT is the model of the clubhouse. So to make it reach all students, the only way possible for it to reach all students would, we would have to change the school system into the clubhouse. And then that's how we would reach all students, okay? Because they're saying it's PhD, it's people with PhD degrees that entered MIT. To say, I didn't learn what I thought I should have learned. And now they're creating the legs and the robots that walk up to you and speak and ask for a quarter. They have glasses that talk about your temperament. They have jackets that help prevent rape victims from, you know, deter rape victims, rapists from raping people. They have all types of inventions and ideas that people haven't even seen yet. So to get it to all students, I would say change the public school system or the school system in general into the model of the clubhouse.
Yeah, I'd just like to comment on that. In 1963, I applied to Fisk University and was turned down. In 1969, I wound up teaching at Fisk University without a college degree based on what I knew. And I set up the film and photography department, which was the first stage of the School of Communication. So I just wanted to reinforce that, and that was where any of y'all were born, probably.
Yes, sir.
Well, Isaac, you mentioned recruitment and retention. Can you briefly describe some of the recruitment strategies that happen at these organizations, and also what is retention like?
Okay. All right. Well, when I recruit, I have to focus on what the students like. If they like basketball, or they like video game playing, if they like poetry, rap music, they like Facebook, whatever they like, that's the tool that I use to recruit, okay? Now, it's up to us as adults to inform them, whereas to once they come in, then life goes beyond just this initial start, okay? And the retention part comes from love. I think that us as adults have to show a genuine love to the youth to make them want to stay so they can learn more of what you're saying so they can move forward. I think if we look at them like paychecks and like, you know, with a cold-hearted spirit, then they don't stay around. And if they're not around you, you can't mentor them or you can't help them move into a nice career. So when I recruit, I always find something they like, and then I retain them by the use of love, okay? For the love of what they like to do and the love of what I like to do, and we mix them together and we move it, and we create what's called a partnership. Together. So that's how I retain. That's how I retain.
Do you have any specific numbers though, on like what percentage of people who enter the clubhouse stay for, you know, a certain length of time?
Okay. Well, with the boys, with the young men, I think we have I have a 72% retention rate where they come in and stay. If they don't stay, it might be due to they might have moved, or, you know, relocated, or some of them get in trouble sometimes, that happens. Okay, so, but the majority of them do stay, so it's more than 50%. The young ladies, how I get the young ladies to stay, my retention rate with the young ladies is approximately 63%, it's a little lower, but it's still over 50%. Okay, so how I get the young ladies to stay is that I recruit women mentors to help relate to some of their needs, because I can't relate to all of their needs being a man sometimes. You know, sometimes their stomach hurt and I just can't relate to that, you know, but women do. So I keep a balance in the clubhouse where it's a man, and then sometimes the young men need a mother in the clubhouse. So it's a woman in the clubhouse to help. So that's how I retain, because love is all, once love is felt, they're willing to do anything. Okay, so that's what I do. So those are my retention. So I, you know, most of the time, the whole neighborhood, when I walk through the Austin area, any of those children that came or young people that ever came into the clubhouse from 25 and down, I know them. And they still come to the clubhouse and still feel welcome in the clubhouse. Even if they've gotten in trouble, they'll still come back. Like, it's like I made a mistake, but I know we can correct it some type of way. So I say, you know, about 72% is for the male and about 64-65%.
All of our recruitment is word of mouth. We haven't done any kind of marketing push to our teenagers, except from using, you know, Facebook and Twitter in sort of kind of casual ways, but not as a really formal marketing strategy. When we opened, didn't do any marketing to schools or anything, and they just came in. And we found that word of mouth is the best way to recruitment to youth and the best way for retention, to keep retention. So we're getting the students in that actively want to be in new media, that have come in some form because they heard it from a friend. And that means that our numbers keep growing and growing. One of our most successful programs with the highest attendance is a program called Lyricist Loft. It's our open mic night. It's open mic for everything. So it's spoken word, music, dance, anything they can come up with, they can perform. It's completely run by our teenagers. They MC the program, and they do all of our Facebook marketing for it. And we started with 15 students attending, and now I think our highest number that we've had in attendance is 175. So that's just all from the teenagers doing the work and getting the word out, because they are better marketers than we are. And I don't name any programs or come up with any ideas for programs without talking to a teenager first. So
I would second all of that. I've done a number of pitches at schools and put posters and such up. And I would say it's probably accounted for, if I'm lucky, maybe 1 to 2% of my total recruitment. 98% of my members have just been word of mouth from each other. When we opened 6 years ago, we put a big vinyl sign on the front of our building that said Computer Clubhouse, and we had it up for about probably a week. And I guess that was enough to bring in 4 or 5 of our original youth, and I think those 4 or 5 youth have just networked out to the youth that I saw Thursday. I would second what Mr. Isaac said, that I think it's ultimately, you know, there's a coordinator in Israel that said, you know, youth might come to the door, their original recruitment might be because of your abilities or your cool projects that you show them, or you try to, if kids, you know, when we do Photoshop, every kid, every time they do it, I say, all right, you're gonna take 2 prints. I'm gonna hang one on the wall to inspire other youth. I don't tell them that, but I say, you got 2. One I'm gonna inspire other youth with, and the other you're gonna take home. You're gonna show it off, because that's my marketing, is them showing it off. And that maybe brings them in, but that doesn't retain them. The reason they are retained, and again, is, Mr. Isaac uses the word love. I probably have a stereotype at my youth department as probably the meanest youth worker there, because on a fairly regular basis, I've kicked kids out of the clubhouse and said, hey, you're not here because you're not making something. I think it's ultimately the outputs that keep kids coming back. It's the outcomes that get me funding and that I talk to folks like you about, but it's the outputs that keep our kids coming back because they want to make another video. They want to do something cool. I'm really proud to say actually that 2 of our most incredible projects, one that you saw up there and Rhonda's, you saw her performance before, she's made this music video, were made by young women after they had become pregnant and had their child. So they're both young teenage mothers that are raising kids. I'm certainly disappointed that happened and it's gonna make their life harder, but I think it's wonderful that they remembered their early enough outputs at the clubhouse enough to then put up with that challenge and say, even though I have way less time now, this is something important enough to me that I'm gonna come to the clubhouse and I'm gonna get this project done because I care about it. And it's not because of me, it's because they wanna make that video, they wanna make that song, they wanna make that output. So I think your outputs and showing them off is kind of how you retain youth, but your recruitment is largely word of mouth from other kids embracing their interests. Again, not being a teacher.
I also think that working through After School Matters, with After School Matters in conjunction with them, putting a check in their pocket is also important.
I would mention though that's not for all our youth, and I know it's not all for all your youth either.
That's not all of them, but that's a lot of them.
I have a couple of questions. One, Taylor, I was curious about the mentors you were talking about that you bring in for your programs. I wondered if they're paid, or how you select them and then train them or work with them to present the programs. And then the other question I wondered about is how many of the kids in your programs are not enrolled in school? And if the programs are open to kids who have been kicked out of school or aren't successful in school?
Well, speaking to the mentor question, so all of our mentors are part-time or full-time employees, so they're paid. And they're all hired through Digital Youth Network. And Digital Youth Network has a really great professional development program. So they're hired because of their technical and artistic skills. And then Digital Youth Network will train them to teach, to be able to transfer those skills to a workshop or one-on-one space. So they have a really nice professional development model that sort of weighs equally cultural capital, pedagogical knowledge, a portfolio. They're, you know, all of our mentors are required to keep working and keep creating work along with our students. And now I'm just blanking on our 4th piece of the pie for PD. I will think of it in a second. And all of our mentors, they go through a professional development period where they're not actually in front of students for at least 2 weeks to a month. And we do professional development every week. So it's ongoing development of our workforce. And that includes the mentors as well as our librarians. We have a couple cyber navigators in our space. So that's everyone learning all of these different ways of curriculum development. And all of our curriculum is actually developed with the mentors and library staff. So it's co-created.
I think with my mentors, most of them are not paid. What we do in our clubhouse is that we use a model where we say, either you could give us your time, your talent, or your treasure as a mentor, okay? Where you could come and give us an hour a week or an hour every other week or whatever. That's what you donate to be a mentor, to help come teach us. If you can't donate your time, then let's set up a workshop where you can teach somebody else your talent and allow them to do your mentoring for you, and you foster to give them your talent. And if you can't do that, then just give us a check, you know, write a check and give us some of your treasure, and we have massive resources because, you know, we need some things like that. Other mentors that we have, we use interns from colleges such as Robert Morris or Chicago State and stuff like that. So we use a lot of work study students as well as mentors like that. So they might receive a small stipend. But the majority of our mentors are paid professionals in the community that myself or somebody else might go out and recruit them to come in to help us come out of the state of emergency and help us train our youth. We have bank professionals, we have bookstore managers, we don't, you know, artists, we don't limit to what your career, what your talent might be. So we recruit all to come into the clubhouse and help.
I would mention I would love to pay my mentors, but unfortunately I can't. Our total operating budget for the year is about $40,000, which barely covers salary. So it's not expensive. I mean, it's hard, but it's not expensive to kind of do what we're doing. I think what's really so important is that you don't necessarily need the resources that we may or may not have. It's about the paradigm shift. Probably our most effective mentor that I have right now is a gentleman named Warren. He is, I believe, in his 50s, lives in Rogers Park right down the street from us. Never graduated from college. I believe, by his own admittance, didn't know how to turn a computer on before he came into us about a year ago. I would still say probably has lower computer skills than 90% of our members, but he's one of the most effective mentors because he's there every day. He has an interest, a profound interest in the kids and in music. He was a musician, played bass and piano, didn't do a lot of hip hop, so he's learning acid along with a lot of our kids. The kids are teaching him acid, and I think that's one of the most effective roles of a mentor, is not to be a teacher, but to be a student, to work, you know, to be with that student and let that student get that empowerment in teaching something. I think for effective mentoring, we have to remove the notion that they have to be better. They have to be someone that does this better. No, they don't. They have to be someone that's passionate about it. That's very true. I've seen many people fail because they liked the idea, but they weren't passionate about the art, or they weren't passionate about this particular medium of technology. But they don't necessarily have to be better than the kids or more experienced than the kids. They have to just be willing to learn with them. So I think that mentors can kind of come from any walk of life. With Mr. Isaac, we also have a couple of students that do work study internships and such with us. Which is usually not harmful, but I find actually is far less effective. Because those youth are primarily, and they're older youth, they're college-aged youth, but they're primarily there for the paycheck because it's their job, it's their work-study job. They might like the idea of it, but they don't live and breathe the idea of making art and helping young people with it, whereas our community volunteers do. So if I see someone on the street looking at our sign, I think, wow, that's potentially a way more effective mentor than this person from DePaul or Loyola or Northwestern, where I teach. Not to knock those students, but they have other concerns.
I actually just wanted to reiterate, our mentors are sort of in the same situation where they come in with maybe one set of technical expertise, but then learned so much from our students. A really great example is Brother Mike, who is my co-program manager of U-Media. He's been with DYM for 10 years. He came in as a spoken word artist and did not like computers, didn't want to deal with them at all, and now he's so technically savvy. He can teach video and photography and all of these different things. And also I remembered the fourth piece of our PD pie, which is technical skills. So we do, you know, help all of our mentors, you know, really up their technical skills and level up along with our students. Also, we have a junior mentor program. We have some of our students who have shown sort of exceptional skills within different areas work as junior mentors for 5 hours a week, and they get service learning hours. They're not paid. And they, you know, they'll critique on our social network, and they'll also help us lead workshops and actually help us develop workshops. And that's actually started to move into an internship program where we have graduating members of U-Media who are freshmen in college come in, and they're paid part-time. And they'll actually lead their own workshop. So right now, one of our interns does all of our certification of our recording studio and does our intro to GarageBand workshop. And he was a student who came into U-Media who liked music but didn't know how to do really anything with music. He sang in the choir, and now he's in college studying music production and working at U-Media.
We have time for maybe one or two more quick questions.
Can I make one more comment? I just thought I promised to be very brief. A former clubhouse coordinator from Florida has just recently moved up here and is, I think, the technology education director at the Art Institute, and I'm glad is a friend of mine as well. And I launched a program at my clubhouse a couple years ago that I thought was an awesome idea called Tickets. And so I would have kids, basically, because we when the kids come in, we want to make them do something. That's our preeminent motive, make them work, make them make a project. And I thought, well, you know, this would be great if they have in a second incentive in addition to that. I'll say that, you know, you propose this, you choose your own deadline, and then you get 60 tickets for getting your project done, or 100 or 20 or whatever. And with that, then we had like donated stuff that they could buy little bags of chips or something from us with their tickets. And I thought it was a great idea. And I talked to Carolina about it, and she said, oh, don't tell me about that. I thought, you don't want to know, you're into what I do, this is great, yeah, it's a wonderful thing. And she said, no, I don't like any achievement for a youth other than the achievement of that project itself, other than that artistic fulfillment. Because if we want to train these young people to be passionate artists, and I should put out there that to me, a software engineer is as much an artist as a painter. And my father is a professional software engineer and has worked in the field for many years and does amazing things. Roboticist is an artist too. To me, anyone that's creating is an artist. And I feel like if we want to train these young people to be passionate artists, they have to realize that the reward is the project itself. And that itself then brings additional rewards, but it can't be for money, it can't be for tickets. That said, like Mr. Isaac, we also do ASM internships and such, but we try to keep it as a minority of our program.
Okay, I have a
responsibilities, like when you tap into that issue.
We have a handful of students who will, we open at 1 o'clock every day, so we have a handful of students who will show up at UMedia, and we know that they're supposed to be in school. We don't play truant officer, and they know that. We just have one-on-one conversations with them where it's really like, I know where you're supposed to be, and you know that I know where you're supposed to be, so what are you gonna do about that? It's usually that question. We try to keep it one-on-one, and it's more about us giving advice to them rather than disciplining them and making them go back or calling the school. And we tend to have relationships where our students, our biggest rule in the space is respect yourself, respect each other, respect the space. We try to foster the sense that, you know, we're not going to turn them in for something, but, you know, we're going to have an open talk about what's going on in their life and trying to get them to go back. We're not going to punish them. We're not going to kick them out of UMedia and make them go back to school. But, you know, we're going to make it clear that that's where we think they should be.
Well, in our clubhouse, we have age requirements to come in at certain times because I've been working inside the YMCA. I have younger members and older members. So if the older members are 19, 20, 18, the grad that probably dropped out of high school or something like that, then I would give them a time before the younger ones come in, okay? So they can work on, you know, the specific skills that they want to develop. Then after school, starting at 2:30, from 2:30 to 6, then I work with straight school age, so you know the school age are there. And then after 6 o'clock, then the older teenagers come in and work on their projects. Okay, so that's how we deal with those that I don't advocate dropping out of school, but I'm not going to judge you because you made a mistake or something happened to you in your life, and now you want to make a change because they come because they want to make some type of change. They want a career. They want to do something with their life. So it's up to us to say, okay, well, you can't do it at this time, so we have to give them an alternative when they can do it. So I give them a little space before school let out to come in and get themselves together, you know, where I have job training programs or something like that going on, or they can come in the music studio and work on whatever they need to work on. But I give them an opportunity before school starts.
Bear with me. I want to bring something from the Twitter feed to you all's attention. The comment is, we need to make sure all of our communities have competent tech centers for our youth so this can happen, this being the kind of thing you all are talking about. And I don't know whether you all are the tip of an iceberg of many, many centers that are already doing this across Chicago, or whether there are centers that are struggling with models for how to make magic happen with kids, but I want to ask what you think it is, and I want to ask if you can help us next year get this. I would want to say it's kind of like an invisible community of tech centers from Chicago here, so that all these best practices can promulgate, and we can, because if you say you can do this on 40 grand a year held together with rubber bands, then we ought to be doing it in every ward, in every part of the city. So thank you.
All right, thank you.
If I can address that, I think to me, from what I have seen, is that there are a number of community-based organizations that don't have the curriculum of CPS or typical school hanging over them doing this. So the library being certainly one, us being another one, and you know, being at the YMCA or being at a kind of an independent community center. There are folks, not as many as maybe should be, but there are folks doing this. I think the biggest struggle, though, is still in traditional education. And I am not going to say that kids shouldn't go to school for 8 hours a day. That should happen. But I think we have to really seriously change what's happening during those 8 hours. And that's probably the biggest opposition I get when I talk to teachers about what I do. Usually what I find most of the time is they say, oh, I love that. I don't want to say that too loud. I don't want my principal to hear that I love that, but that sounds really neat. It's great that you have that luxury. Because teachers, by and large, feel so crippled now. They feel like they can't do anything. They want to have this freedom for youth, but they're not allowed to because we have all this political accountability on them. And so I think that's the biggest change that should happen. And that money's already spent. Those people are already being paid to be there. Let them do their jobs.
Thank you.
So hopefully by next year, there's a program in the works right now that's being built right now called the Chicago Learning Network, and it's a series of institutions and smaller after-school organizations throughout the city of Chicago. They're trying to come together and figure out a way to create a kind of cohesive after-school learning environment that spans all areas of the city, where students can jump from program to program to program and have a unified learning experience. So hopefully by next year, the network will be up and running. We're in planning stages right now. And if you want to take a look, a model of that type of learning network is the New Youth Learning Network in New York City, who have been working for the past couple of years to try and, you know, unify all the different institutions within the city. So hopefully next year at East Chicago, the learning network will be a part of this.
I would love to come back and help. If I'm still around to help you, I would definitely be able to help. And I think that a good way to make sure that our particular mission, the Intel Computer Clubhouse, is spread, is if we could put a clubhouse here at UIC and make sure that there's a clubhouse here, and then the model will be here, and then you can see the model for yourself, how it goes. You know, I know we have, I mean, it should be a model already in UIC like that. But if it's not, it can be a pilot program that you run for the after-school students to come here and learn at UIC under that level. And then we can build it from there, and then you can go from other colleges and stuff like that. That's how I look at it.
I think one really great thing that the Clubhouse Network did when they started was they said, we've got these great ideas. We're going to give them to people and let them choose whether or not they want to enact them. I think even the differences that you're hearing about between my clubhouse and Mr. Isaac's clubhouse kind of highlight the fact that if you make programs too similar, they don't work. And I think what's sort of working really well about the clubhouse is that there were adults that have the right ideas for what we want to do, but then we have the freedom to enact it how we want. So I kind of like the fact that we don't have great accountability on us from the network, that we can run our center however we want. For Mr. Isaac, I think separating grades and ages in this clubhouse works great. For me, I tried that and it was a disaster, so I haven't done it. And we have the freedom that we don't have to do the same thing. We have the same principles, but we get to it by the ways that we each know work.
About out of time. Everybody needs to eat lunch, I know that. But I wanted to thank Taylor and Jeff and Isaac very much, and if we could give them all a round of applause. Thank you, and we will be reconvening at 12:45, and there's a community media session in here, and then a genealogy session in the Dearborn room, so I hope everybody has a good lunch.
Information.